Welcome back to the How I Sold This podcast, where we unpack stories of venture acquisitions to learn from founders and M&A teams that have built, sold, and acquired startups. I'm your host, JJ Asland, and in this special episode, we'll hear from the other side of the table with Joseph Tao, VP of Corporate Development at Sony Corporation of America and the Managing Director of Sony Innovation Fund, as he shares what he looks for in companies and the advice that he has for founders looking to one day sell their business. So let's get started. So Joe, thank you for joining the How I Sold This podcast. So just to level set and help the audience understand some of your background, could you share what did your path look like, you know, starting with more of an engineering background and product focus to where you are today in the investment and corp dev?
Absolutely. These days, I wear two hats actually at Sony. I lead U.S. Mergers and acquisitions. I also wear a hat of managing director of Sony Innovation Fund and Innovation Growth Ventures, which are two different funds that we run at the corporate level. Before Sony, I have kind of taken an interesting journey to get to this point, especially as a 10-year Sony employee. Prior to Sony, about a third of my career is kind of defined as bleeding-edge technology, so deep into what is today known as industrial IoT with Ford Motor Company, traveling around the world, building up plants and information systems and architectures from scratch. Another third of me goes around product, services, and P&L. These experiences kind of come from build up out of Intel and the microprocessor areas, as well as Selectron in supply chain manufacturing. The last third of me in my career is as an investor, both as equity research on sell-side equity research, covering semiconductors, and also in lower middle market private equity, and eventually venture and M&A investing at the corporate level of Sony.
Great. So I feel like, you know, you'd probably be described as a pretty well-rounded individual, given all that experience, you know, everything from, you know, buy side, sell side, product development, engineering. I guess if you look back at your time, you know, at Ford, at Intel, how did those maybe shape how you look at companies today? Is there anything that you feel like contributes or gives you an advantage as an investor and as somebody on the M&A side?
Absolutely. You know, I've taken a very interesting journey to get to the buy-side investment area. I haven't been a pure investor my entire career, but rather a mix and a hybrid of a number of different areas, as you could see. I would just say that along the road, it has all been character building, and that there have been some major, major lessons learned early on in my career as a technologist and a technical person that still stick with me today. One of the biggest things that sticks with me today, building up systems inside the automotive industry and universe, is the importance, the emphasis and importance of people into the technology process, people as customers. So really rapidly figuring out through failure, actually, that people must want and demand the technology as opposed to the technology pushing for a solution amongst itself to garner success. It's much easier to be successful when somebody wants to find value in what you do, and not one where you're trying to deliver value for yourself or to an industry. So really taking it down to a personal level. What that involves, though, is actually quite tricky because there's a market timing involved with that. People have to be ready for, you know, kind of socially ready for a technology to come about in order for them to gravitate towards it. And so even though something might be super technical in the background and its architecture, it's really, I've learned that it's the focus point of the interaction point that really, you know, kind of garners that success to delivering value out to the customer, and that the customer actually has to want to receive that value.
Yeah, that can be something that's very difficult, I think, for large or for small companies. So I guess you end up with, you know, in some cases, you know, there's been product flops. You know, if you think of like Google Glass, for example, and they hadn't thought through some of the issues that, you know, would cause backlash. And then you've got other companies that are successful at building, you know, a product like the Apple iPhone that people weren't necessarily asking for yet.
That's right. As a matter of fact, the example around the iPhone is one that I think about often, as many people do. Well, I often find myself when I'm looking at deals or opportunities these days, always asking a question, since we're looking at the leading edge of technology and people are trying to utilize that technology for technology-enabled solutions onto the broader market, the question is oftentimes comes up is, am I looking at the Apple Newton or am I looking at the Apple iPhone?
Right. And my assumption would be that Sony, you know, the internal development teams at Sony would be a really good litmus test for understanding if this technology has, you know, larger commercial viability.
That's right. So there's a broad array of things that we might do. One is check with a business unit who's operating a P&L for profit. Another is the R&D unit, which might be looking at a longer-term horizon specifically geared towards technology. The kind of integrating the thoughts of the two might give us a sense of the viability of a technology, a business within Sony and even outside of Sony.
So what types of technologies are interesting to Sony today, you know, either for you personally or for the business at large?
Yeah, there's a couple of ways to think about this. One is, you know, with the two hats that I wear, one is on M&A, if we were to target specific types of technologies, and the other is in venture investing, where we might look at, you know, just kind of what sandboxes we think Sony might want to play in. So, you know, to address the first, Sony's major businesses are essentially, if you were to break it down on a broader level, we've got a gaming business, a music business, a movie business. So Sony Pictures, Sony Music, Sony Interactive Entertainment, and also Sony Semiconductor, which is a very large provider for image processing. Then we also have all of the other things that Sony is very, very well known for in its brands, which is consumer electronics, and services around that as well.
Right. And would you say your focuses for both investing and M&A are pretty consistent across each of those businesses? Or do some tend to be businesses where you would likely invest in a company or, you know, build a partnership, and others might be areas where you might acquire?
Yeah, I think it's actually quite different. In my mind, I actually look at them almost as separate buckets. Just as an example, if you had $10 million to spend, if you acquire a company for $10 million, you're acquiring people, liability, assets. It's a much bigger deal to integrate something into a company. If you invest in $10 million into an entity just to watch an industry grow, to help evolve a company, to help evolve an ecosystem, you're in there as an investor trying to learn, trying to contribute, trying to build something bigger. So the obligations are very, very different, and therefore, like the types of investments we might make and the targets that we might have on each look very different as well. So, as an example, if we were looking for a capability that we wanted to bring in house and it was available in the marketplace, and we think it's very complementary to one of our business units, we might go off and acquire that. Those things might be sourced through corporate development. They could be sourced through executives. They could be sourced through the business unit itself and developing those working relationships and eventually evolve into some type of acquisition or some type of partnership or some relationship. When we're doing venture investing, it's quite a bit different. It's quite a bit broader because we're trying to figure out what are the interesting sandboxes that Sony might play in. And while the business units have a voice and we are certainly listening to all this resources that we have internally, we may choose to involve ourselves on the venture front in categories that might not be directly on the roadmap of specific business units, but rather be in more of an exploratory form of looking at something and keeping our eye on technologies. So as with any toolkit, each tool is different. The use of the tool is different. And this is very much the case inside of the investment business as well.
Got it. And yeah, I like what you said about just having different tools in the toolkit. When you look at the investing and some of the M&A strategy, how much of that is a two-way conversation? And, you know, I guess when I say that, we look at the investing as a way to basically be, you know, ears to the ground, share information with the business units that could be helpful to their strategy. But I guess, how do you think about that balance of being either reactive to what Sony is looking for versus, you know, playing back what you're learning in the market and having that influence, you know, the product and business strategy?
I actually think that we're looking both proactively and reactively, depending on what the business units want to do on the acquisition front, because we do get involved in those discussions at the BU in terms of what's next, what's the longer term horizon look, why might that be, and what might be, you know, kind of target companies or what are the capability gaps that may need to be filled, inorganically or organically. So we'll take a look at it in that way. On the venture side, it's really kind of interesting. Our number one priority is to help our investments, our portfolio companies, grow. And so we think about our portfolio companies as part of our family. We are trying to get involved with them to help them reach out, really act and reach locally to those emerging tech companies, which is why we have people on the ground running in the specific geographies. And then utilizing the Sony network and all of our resources to help them grow globally and reach out to the world. So different companies at different stages need different things. But our mentality there is really focus on the company. Yes, if there's information to bring back and it is relevant, then we might bring it to the BUs. But first is to establish a position and an understanding of an ecosystem or a company or a technology. And then working with it and evolving it to the point where something can be done. You know, on the one hand, I think what you're talking about is more about, on the M&A front, we have our Sony hats on, purely looking at the P&Ls and how to enhance businesses. But on the venture investment side, while we are working on behalf of Sony, our number one priority is actually to help these companies evolve and grow. So we in some ways, take our Sony hats off.
Yeah, and I think that's really important to, you know, first look at the needs that the company has and that the startup has. And, you know, if you are effective in supporting the startup, you know, it typically will come back around. Shifting focuses, I guess, to, you know, where are some of the focuses today? Are there any recent examples of acquisitions as well as investments that you'd be able to talk about?
Sure. We're not doing double-digit acquisitions per year, but across all of our businesses, just in the last couple of years, we could talk about we've made a very large acquisition in EMI to make Sony Music now the largest song catalog in the world. We've made investments in the semiconductor business in SoftKinetic for time-of-flight sensors for the semiconductor business. We've made an acquisition of Insomniac, which is a studio whom we've known for quite some time for PlayStation, Sony Interactive Entertainment, that is. And we've also made an acquisition of Audio Kinetic, which is what we consider to be the world's leader in interactive sound. So, you know, from semiconductors to the entertainment businesses, we've been making spot acquisitions to bolster the current business units themselves. So this is kind of what, going back to what I was talking about before, we've got more than likely in the M&A sense, we are acquiring businesses that are more complementary to what we do that help either fill capability gaps or bring new capabilities to market, and you know, are more than likely to follow that strategy.
Well, I guess I know Insomniac Games was a partner of Sony's and I guess with PlayStation. Some of the other ones you mentioned, were these acquisitions that came out of a longstanding partnership that Sony had with the company, or were these companies that were investments, or I guess how did these originally come about?
All over the map, as a matter of fact. In the case of Insomniac, you're right. It's been a long-time relationship with the game studios, more than a decade. In the case of SoftKinetic and Altair, these are relationships. Those companies are not even necessarily that old, right? And so we've built up a relationship around them. We've done significant homework around them, but relatively new companies, new technologies, and either known in the industry or we've known about them. The level of relationship varies across the board in terms of how we look at these kind of companies. So it's not... It definitely happens, but it's not necessarily happening every single time.
Yeah, and what does the process look like for you at Sony to try to evaluate the strategic value of a given investment or an M&A opportunity?
One might think that it's the technology that's the most important, but to our experience, technology, if you need to push it forward, is all dependent on the people. So we look for that fit, the people to be fired up and in wanting to solve problems that the world needs, and trying to figure out how that recipe actually works with the broader business unit or inside the context of Sony. But I can say, at least in my experience doing technology M&A, there's not one situation where the relationship and the people are not of utmost importance.
And when you say relationships, is that relationships with the business unit, or is that relationships with the corp dev team?
From an acquisition perspective, it's relationships with the business unit and the corp dev team. When doing the deal and also in the post-integration, it's all one team, whether you're sitting inside the business unit or not. We're all representing Sony.
Right. And I think that's one of the challenges that a founder has as they're, you know, in the early stages of building their company, is making decisions on, you know, how much should they focus on building those types of relationships, you know, that may help plant the seed for, you know, future exit opportunities, and how much should they focus on the business. And typically, and I guess going to something that Paul Graham wrote, you know, his advice to founders was, you know, you should really only talk to a corp dev team if things are either going really bad and you know that you need to sell the company and you really have nothing to lose, or if things are going really well and the timing is right and you actively are prepared to, you know, sell the company. And I don't know if I 100% agree that that's the only two cases where you should engage. I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, certainly. I think I'm more in your camp, JJ. The corp dev is there to ensure, you know, a positive transaction and make sure that we are both protecting the company and integrating something in and making sure that the target is the appropriate target. But to only go to corp dev, and speaking as a corp dev person, obviously, I think is cutting things a little bit short. As we just talked about, many of the relationships in our recent M&A activity, we've known the people and the executives and the people inside the business. What is it that complements the two companies together? Also taking a very deal-agnostic view, so not calling something M&A or calling something an investment or a partnership, but really trying to identify what is the problem that we can solve together. And in order to do that, you have to involve all those parties. So a corp dev or an executive could bring in a company and we would take a look at it in a certain way. But also, even within the business unit, equally important if they know their environment, they know the markets, to be engaged at the same time.
Right. And I guess I'm trying to also think through the perspective of the founder. And, you know, when they're approaching, you know, Sony for investment, or, you know, they think that their company would be a good fit for Sony to buy, you know, how do they think through your lens of, you know, what is going to be strategic?
On the acquisition side of things, you know, we see a number of different approaches, both as founders and entrepreneurs connecting. It is not unusual for founders and advisors and companies and boards to hire intermediaries such as bankers to help figure out financing scenarios for a company, or to help them engage in those kind of markets to find appropriate buyers. In which case, we have executed on banked opportunities and also not unbanked opportunities, and ones that where we are proactively seeking out companies. But I think it's really important for entrepreneurs to focus more on how the companies might be able to come together and what the problem is that we're trying to solve. I talked about being transaction agnostic, and this is exactly the topic. If somebody comes to me and says, "Oh, we want to be bought," or "This company is for sale," I'm listening to that and I hear it for sure. But I'm also considering that may or may not be the absolute answer for everything. So, you know, what gets me going is really identifying and saying, "Is this company doing something that we want to be doing? How can it help us? And is it possibly an acquisition, or could it be something else?" I think it's more about trying to figure out the problems that you want to solve together than it is about immediately coming to the conclusion about what transaction you want to push.
Right. So I guess you're saying the transaction is not as much the challenge as much as finding the right fit and seeing if you know, this should lead to an investment, this should lead to an acquisition. And that can be a difficult dance to play as a founder when you're approaching a company and, you know, you're also, you know, trying to think through, should this be a partnership? Are we interested in investment from this corporation? Do we want to go down the road of potential acquisition? And often that means that you have to lay your cards on the table and be pretty transparent in, you know, what you're looking for and maybe what some of the needs of the business are. How do you think about, you know, from a founder perspective, what level of transparency do you need to have, especially early on, you know, in these relationships with larger corporations?
Again, the answer is all over the map. But again, you know, with relationship development, there's a lot of trust that has to be built between the two parties to make something happen, right? One of the things that that is oftentimes challenging is, I think this may be true for most corporates and also institutional investors, is that if a company comes out and says, you know, we're for sale, and the corporations, you know, might do a little bit more homework that might be front heavy, and institutional investors might be quicker to jump into the opportunity. So in other words, like the delivery of term sheets and LOIs and things like that can be very misleading in terms of the quality and the quality, meaning the conviction behind opportunities. So to that extent, I would just say that, you know, when we do a lot of upfront work before we deliver LOIs and term sheets. And when you do, you know, get a term sheet from a company like Sony or other corporates, the certainty of close and the certainty behind a deal may be quite a bit different than if somebody came to that conclusion very quickly, as you can imagine. So some people, some entities, and I don't want to carve it as just kind of corporate and institutional, as there's a mix in between. But the issue that often comes up is that company boards, you know, they evaluate what they have on the table. So they, you know, it oftentimes gets grouped into one. But I would actually say that it's very, very different dynamics depending on who you're getting it from and what work has actually been done.
Got it. And when you're in that process, have you seen, you know, through the many reps that you've had, are there certain terms that you think founders should be paying more attention to that they don't, or any blind spots that you tend to see with founders?
Yeah, I think that in my own opinion, that when you talk about corporate acquisitions, as everybody knows, in the planning process, the future is all subject to change. And so, you know, whether markets change, business units change, technologies change, new technologies kind of come aboard, the future is largely unknown. It's very difficult for anybody to talk, even several, you know, a couple of years out. So when you think about, you know, future involvement and compensation, what you're trying to achieve, I would just caution to going too much into a gray zone, trying to make those kind of things work. The only reason is because you don't want a divergence in path in terms of the interests of what you're trying to accomplish to happen too much. So, you know, keeping things simple when it comes to your to expectations and to focus on a goal, I find to be a very wise decision and focal point. And trying to squeeze out possibly like the last dollar on either side, or trying to get too deep into telling the future, often kind of comes up with divergent interests because the future has simply just changed. Targets change for acquirers, the business units, large companies, customer bases. So, you know, all it does is it just puts more volatility in the picture. This is why we focus so much on the philosophy and on the people, because I think that we need to be directionally correct, and we need to cut clean deals that allow people the freedom to go create the things that they wanted to create in the first place without too much, you know, gray zone or pollution in between. So we try to keep things really pure. I think it's a very wise thing to do.
Are there any examples of companies that Sony has acquired where, you know, it did lead to a really good outcome that you'd want to talk through, maybe, you know, why that was the case?
We can talk very generally. One deal that I had led a while back, over 5 years ago, was the acquisition of a company named Gaikai. Gaikai at the time represented one of few companies that was very well aligned around doing streaming gaming. And over the years, we developed that into a business unit or a business within the Sony PlayStation umbrella as a service to provide streaming gaming, now known today as PlayStation Now. Today, if we fast forward, obviously in the competitive dynamic, we see some major companies coming to market with streaming gaming, and that is making the press today. When we did the acquisition, it was fairly high profile in the press, and it turns out that there's a lot of forethought in what we were doing then because of what is happening today. Now, over the period of the 5 years, we've had our hands on the controls of the dial in that business, and we are also, you know, the PlayStation business is also changing over those periods and evolving, and we've recently announced our next generation console on PlayStation 5. And today, the streaming gaming topic is everywhere. So we'll see how the competitive dynamics play out. But here's an example where we had acquired a company. The leadership stayed on for quite some time. And the integration and the unit is fully integrated into the PlayStation ecosystem. And we are ready to compete. So we see that as a success.
Great. So just as we wrap up, I'm interested in if there's any kind of macro level trends that you've been seeing, you know, with large companies and how they're approaching M&A today, especially in the technology space. Are you seeing changes in behaviors from large companies that you're paying close attention to?
There's been an explosion of corporate venture capital in the last 5 years. Meaning that large corporations are putting money to work in emerging technology and venture-oriented kind of investments. That in itself, especially the growth of the economy and the growth of tech, should say a lot to begin with. And it represents companies of varying maturity and conservation reaching out to try and change. We see that in corporate venture capital. And the acquisition front, again, it's all over the map, but there is changing behaviors and the willingness to reach out to explore in areas where companies have not typically gone.
Yeah, exactly. And I think you're seeing a shift in terms of, you know, how are the large companies looking at, you know, the emerging ecosystem, you know, of startups and technologies, and they are trying to get more in the forefront of it. They're not quite as naive to, you know, its ability to supplant, you know, entire industries or companies. I guess if you think about, you know, the founders that may be listening to this podcast that are either thinking about, you know, how will they one day, you know, look to exit the company, they may be in those conversations right now. Is there any kind of advice or learnings that you'd like to leave them with?
And I think it's more of a summary of the things that we've touched on. One is to realize that people drive everything. So if you're thinking about selling your company, you've got to be thinking about your people, yourself, your executives, and even your board and how that might look and how that might transition into the future. I think it's very important to keep an open mind, to not think about specific transactions and liquidity and exits in mind, but more broadly about what is it that you're trying to accomplish and how do you contribute to that that value. And to stay, if you can stay that course, I think the buyers will actually naturally come and find you, although it is also very helpful to be proactive. And that proactivity is an outreach to multiple parts of any kind of corporation, from corporate development, and not singularly corporate development, but really broadly to executive corporate development, to the relevant business units or businesses that might be involved in utilizing your technology and the development of your business to scale their own.
I love that. And I think a good summary of some of the key points that you had today. So Joe, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us and to share some of your experiences and your learnings.
Thank you very much.
As always, thank you for listening to this episode of How I Sold This. You can find more information about the podcast, as well as share your feedback and ideas with us at howisoldthis.co.